You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Onyx Hunt and Onyx Maps. Now, I got to have a little heart-to-heart with you here real quick. I used Onyx Maps on my phone every single day during the hunting season, whether I was out west during my elk hunt, South Dakota mule deer hunt, or my rut vacation in Iowa. I was on my phone using Onyx Maps every part of the day, whether I was looking at terrain features on the topographic and satellite maps that they offer on their app, or if I was leaving a waypoint like a watering hole, or where I left my trail cameras or tree stands, or if I was marking a route from a campsite to a glassing position, or from my truck to a tree stand location. I used Onyx Maps every single day, and I feel like it's an app that made my life a little bit easier. I don't know about you, but there's been times in the past where I have been trying to find a tree stand based off of memory and not off of looking at a map. And I have gotten lost in the dark before. I had to wait till sunup and then you know, find it that way. But that problem does not exist anymore because of Onyx, and there's a ton of other features that I think you guys need to check out. Go to onyxmaps.com and check out all the functionality of the app. Download it to your phone, give it a try, and when you do decide to purchase, enter the discount code NATION20, NATION20, and for new users, you're going to receive 20% off. So, onyxmaps.com.
Welcome to the Land and Legacy Podcast. We're your hosts, Adam Keith
and Matt Dye.
This is your number one resource for all things land.
If you're interested in conservation, habitat management, hunting strategy, and rural real estate, this is the podcast for you.
All right, guys, welcome back to another Land and Legacy Podcast. Thanks for joining us once again. Happy New Year to everybody. I think New Year's will be, what, tomorrow when this releases?
Yeah. Yep, right on the day.
2020. It's insane to think about it, that it's 2020. But it's going to be an exciting year. It's insane. Like, we started this venture in December. Actually, I guess our official launch was January 1, 2017, but kind of drawn up in December of 2016.
Yeah,
but
real quick.
Yeah, here we are now, going into our fourth year, something like that. What is it? Third? I guess it'd be our final year, going into the fourth. Wrapping up year three. So a huge thank you to all you guys.
Numbers, they're hard.
Yeah. Let's talk. Give me true false. Give me true false.
Multiple guests at least.
You know, it's insane to think that we've been doing this now. This is coming up on our 200th-ish podcast, and you know, we still have, in the last week, Matt and I sat down and really started brainstorming podcast for the next couple of months, and it was insane the amount of podcasts that we had lined out that we've never even touched on.
And I really remember this. It was probably March of the first few months that we started really doing podcasts, and someone approached us and was like, you guys realize, like, the rate you're going, you should probably just, like, take some of the podcasts that you already have and just break them up, do like part one, two, and three. So you have like this continuum, because there's only going to be so much information you can put out there.
And it's like, you have no idea.
I appreciate your insight, but there's so much more to talk about. And, and yes, there are things that we talk about over and over, but it's because we see more people doing wrong things and that haven't yet heard the message, or they're great examples of why you need to be doing this, and this. And
we could legitimately every week sit down and do two podcasts, where one podcast is nothing but debunking the stuff we've found on social media.
Yeah, from that week.
from that week, and say, okay, this is a post we saw, this is a post we saw, this is a video we saw. These are all the things that were released this week, and this is why they're false.
Yes.
And this is why they don't apply to true land management, holistic land management.
Principles.
And then we could flip on the second week and say, okay, this is what you should be doing to substitute that, whatever was talked about on the other podcast. This is what we want to do because this is what's more beneficial to the land and all the flora, fauna, and wildlife species, and it's not just focused on one species. So we could legitimately – so what we're saying is it's 2020. We're going into our fourth year, and we're going to be here for the long haul, Lord willing.
Good Lord willing, the creek don't rise.
That's the phrase I was looking for.
We are here.
We're here to stay. And really, the concept, there's a lot of reasons why Land and Legacy was created. But for you guys, one of the big things that we're doing here is to try to save you the time, save you the money from all the stuff that's out there. I mean, there is tons of videos, vloggers, bloggers, articles, you name it, the content's out there. Land management, conservation, deer management, all those types of videos are out there. It's your head could spin 360 just trying to figure out what practice you should implement.
Well, your head's going to spin 360, and then you're going to be so confused you don't take any steps, and it sits there and doesn't. No changes are made. It kind of reminds me of the exercise or workout industry. Like, there's so many different ways to, like,
diet,
cut the fat, trim, exercise, whatever, do this. It's like, guys, eat healthy and exercise.
Yeah.
Those are the basics.
Yeah.
All this other fluff is
marketing
is making you
schemes.
Wasting your time. And that's why, yes, we're here and to save the time and the energy, because these practices, and specifically, there it goes, this podcast is going to break out how to do them and when to do them. And so it's like, that is the purpose. That is the reasons why there's so much information to be able to cover week in and week out. So we appreciate you listening.
Yeah.
And it's like 2020. There's 2020. Some really cool podcasts that are going to be coming up.
Yeah, I was going to – I meant to go back and look to pull
while
up
while
some
you're
of
doing
those.
That, I think it's a like you and your wife listened online this morning, church.
Yeah,
I went. My wife was sleeping from working overnight, but I went and was at service. But it was a great reminder of like, this is not only 2020, like a new year going into it, but it's like a new decade. And like, they talked about how much lives can change in 10 years, this and that. But it was one of those moments where it's like, holy cow, yo. Really, this is a brand new starting point, and there's so many things, I guess, in a year that's unfolded. When I look back over 2019, Adam, you had a daughter, like, that's crazy.
Insane. She's already a year old now, too, and it's just...
Like, your life completely changed.
Yeah.
And
well, that was actually 2018 when that happened, but...
Oh, yeah, that's true, but late in the year.
Yeah.
Anyhow, there's just all these different observations and cool things that can be made. And I want to take the time to say, when you're out there working, because Adam, you and I both know, we learn so much each and every time we're out there, just these different connections, these different intricacies of creation, how it's made. Slow down, just think about it and just take it in, observe those, and make sure while you're out there, improving the land, that you're understanding the purposes of why it's there and the responsibility that you have, let's say, as a landowner, as a land manager, to do the right things.
Yeah, one of the big things, too, that we get the comment from our clients is that our direction, our management plan, our advice is kind of a reason now to – they know what they're doing. They know why they're doing it. They know what they're going to be doing a few months from now, and they have a direction, knowing that it all connects.
Plan.
And I'm putting this on the ground, or I'm doing this practice right now because it's affecting the deer and it's affecting the quail, it's affecting the grouse, whatever region they're in, whatever their focus is. What I'm doing right now is helping them during this span of time. And overall, this is going to be long lasting. I'm here that I'll be able to see this utilized for the next 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 years. Who knows? And this whole, you know, this whole company brand is around a long lasting effect in a positive note for wildlife and the landscape. And so for us, that's been kind of like, you know, you move into a new year, it's always good to reflect on the past year. In the past year, we've been in a pile of states. We've helped a bunch of landowners across the country. And that's just a small part of what our overall mission and goal is. And really, when you look ahead, 2020, I would like to say, I mean, we look at some of the new states we're going to be in Minnesota.
Yep.
That's going to be exciting.
Oh, yeah.
Minnesota's coming up, and really more videos come out, and hopefully we can look back at this time next year and say, man, there was a lot more habitat that was put on the ground, a lot more landowners who are seeing their first covey of quail on a piece of ground they haven't seen in years, or there's just a lot of great things happening. So I'm very excited for 2020.
Definitely. There's so many positives that could be taken away from it. One thing that we haven't ever really done, and I think that we need to, because you guys have been so good to us and following along consistently, but is this podcast here, start of a new year, trying something different, share this podcast with someone you've never shared it, you know, maybe a past podcast of ours with before, someone who's going to really get this information, understand it, and take it and run with it. Because that then means that you guys are assisting people in improving X amount of acres as well with us. And so by sharing it with someone new, a new friend, a new landowner, maybe it's a landowner you want to hunt on and say, hey, this is kind of like my mindset. This is what I want to do. This is kind of like the thoughts that I have, how I approach land management. I would want to do these types of practices. I'd want to do that at these times. Take an hour to listen to this, you know, run through it, but just share it with someone new. We'd love that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things that I don't like to ask that a whole lot. Like our YouTube channel. Go to our YouTube channel and you'll see our videos. I don't even know the last 6 videos. I can assure you, you haven't seen anything other than a button at the very end of the video that says subscribe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like to beat you over the head with please subscribe. But it is a part of the business that we're in. Your not only listening, but your support of sharing our content and subscribing to our YouTube channel. That helps us out in the long run and continues to help motivate us and inspire us. And one of the great things is the more subscribers I notice that we get, the more comments we get about people wanting certain videos, or
yep,
they're wanting us to show them a different thing and or a different how-to. So the more interaction you guys do and comments and brainstorm with us, the more videos we're going to do. And so that's always a huge win. So 2020, please share our content with a friend or landowner, a neighboring landowner that may not be aware of the information we're putting out there. And, you know, that's just a great thing for you to do with your neighborhood. The more people in your neighborhood putting habitat on the ground, the better off you're going to be. Just one of those things that we're all in this together. The mindset of being an island and not wanting any of your neighbors to do is a very selfish mindset that should not be. It's not something that's going to be for a long haul. It's a very, it's a ship with holes in it. So try to get your neighbors on board. Talk to your neighbors. That's another thing you can do in 2020. Build a relationship with neighboring landowners. Maybe share some deer pictures. I know some of our clients who are having some of the best results are the ones who are on board with their neighbors and working together to try to pull the rope the same direction.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this podcast in particular would be fantastic to share with a neighbor and say, hey, listen, this is what I'm doing this year. I don't know if you want to be a part of that or join in, but this is how I'm going to approach my land. It'd be awesome if we could come together and make a greater, larger impact for the local deer herd. So that's another great, great person to be able to share this with. But we've got a couple new hats as well on the online store. Adam, what are those, the new hats that are
available? So we've got
available?
A blaze orange hat with our black logo, Land and Legacy for Love of the Land logo on there. We've got a blaze orange hat that has the quail patch. So if you're an upland bird hunter and you're chasing quail, pheasants, even deer, and you like quail, that's a great hat for you. We also have the brown complete panel, six-panel waterfowl
hat.
Mesh. No mesh. No mesh, and it's unstructured. So we had a lot of guys asking for no mesh back. Because they needed their bald head covered is what they told me. So we have a brown hat that has got the new waterfowl wood duck patch on it. Of course, $5 go to Ducks Unlimited there. But then we also have the tricolor amber, birch, amber gold, birch, and white. I don't know, three-colored baby blue, white, and gold-colored hat. It's like our whitetail hat. It also has the waterfowl wood ducks on it as well. So four new hats on the store, shoplandandlegacy.com.
Perfect.
Go ahead. You want to jump right into this now?
I think
it's going to be a long podcast, It's important that we go ahead and get right into it. Year in the life of a land manager.
Grab a pen and paper or get out a calendar. Don't care what you do. Make notes on your phone. But it's exactly what it sounds like.
Yeah. This is going to be a long haul.
We're taking a year month by month and breaking down all the different activities, habitat techniques that you could be or should be doing during that month of the year. Yes, there are some variations based on your latitude, area or region in which you live. We'll hit on those. But it's important for us to break it down because this, again, goes back to the mission of prioritizing and getting the best results you can. There are so many things out there that will steal your time, take your time, and leave you with poor results.
Well, you left the worst part about it. Take your time, take your money.
Oh, man.
And still leave you with
Give
no
me that
results.
Money back. Yeah, and you can't get either of those back. You know, it's like once it's done, it's done.
Yeah, I'm sitting here going, how many in this thing, in this whole long list? So we're looking at calendar months, and I'm trying to see how many in there we can make sponsor or product plugs the whole way through it, right? Very few, because this is just hard work and putting habitat on the ground from January to December.
And honestly, once it turns the clock or calendar page turns back over, it's restart and do it again.
Yeah.
Because that's the crazy thing is there's not a point of being finished. I don't say that to scare people off, but it's you go through a let's say a construction phase, and you might do that for a few years. Get that property in the shape.
If you took this right here and you said, for the next 3 years, I'm going to do this. Every month, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
And then year 4, 5, 6 and on down the road, you're doing more of a preventative maintenance. You're doing a rotation to keep it in a more beneficial state.
You just keep it in this state of optimization. And most of that can be done, or that work is a heck of a lot less backbreaking or intense. You can do a lot of acres in a short amount of time and short input, you know, small inputs. We're talking prescribed fire, we're talking herbicide, you know, usage and management, controlling invasives, or just removing unwanted species. But once you get there, it's almost like a cruise control.
Yeah.
Very few properties get there, but there is hope. And no, you're not done. By the time you work 3, 4 years hard at this, honestly, you're going to love the work, love the results. You're not going to want to be finished.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing. But at the same time, you got to keep it in that state of just beautiful habitat. Yeah. And there's always something.
You're
that
starting
needs to
out
be
the
done.
First couple of years, you're doing 80 grit. You're trying to cover as much ground as possible. And then year 4, 5, 6, and on down the road, you're doing 220. You're just trying to fine-tune it.
Perfections at that point. No one's a perfectionist, and nature is chaotic. But that's the point where you get as close to perfection with managing natural resources as possible.
I think somebody posted on our Facebook. We were posting some betting tickets that clients had sent to us. And
yeah.
One guy posted and said that a tornado went through and he thought everything was ruined.
Yes.
And his wife told him he'd be fine. And then he had it's like 2 years later and he had the best season yet. Yeah. And it's like chaos. Nature loves chaos.
Yeah.
And
it's real.
You know, my hometown, I think back to there's this giant deer everybody's talking about. And, you know, giant for the Ozarks. One guy swears it's 200 inches. I think of where this buck is at, where people are seeing it. And I go back 5 years to this timber harvest that happened when everybody's like, have you seen how bad they wrecked the place?
Destroyed it, probably.
Yeah.
Right?
And it's like, well, that's where that deer's living now.
Yep.
And so, you know, there's a lot of great things about chaos, but this is a very, this podcast is very much. We have a plan in place. We know what we're doing this month, next month, and the next month. And let's be honest, fellas. There's not many of us that have a amount of time that's just, oh, let's go do this. Let's go do this. It's very much like when I go to the farm and when a lot of our clients go to the farm, it's like I need to know exactly what I'm doing. That way I can get as much done as possible because I'm going to run around like a madman until my time's up or my wife calls me and says I need to get home.
Yep.
Then I'm headed back and I'm thinking about, man, I wish I'd have done that. I wish I'd have done that. This is here. This podcast is coming to you so you have an idea what you should be doing during this time frame.
Remove the stress of deciding what to do and just know that this is the window to do it. I'm going to do it now or here at this window, and I'm getting it done, and I'm not going to do these other projects at this time because it's not going to be the most effective or it's just not the right time for me. I'm doing this now. I get to the farm, I'm executing it, I'm going back home knowing I made a difference.
Yes.
And generally speaking, there's three different, let's say, categories or groups that we can put a lot of these management practices into. If we break down the year, pretty much you've got like a dormant season. And for many, we're gonna say this as a broad spectrum, trying to collect as many folks into this group as possible. But typically, that dormant season is going to run mid-October, early November through March. That's the typical window, dormant seasons, for much of the whitetails range. That group or those dates have a specific like types of management that you should be doing. And then there's like early growing season, generally speaking, April-May timeframe. And then there's the growing season, June through mid-October. And there's kind of your year. But each one of those units or blocks is specifically broken up based on the biology of plants and what's happening there. You're managing vegetation. And I think that's what's oftentimes just misunderstood is when we're talking about just overall land management, yes, wildlife is included in that, but you're managing plants.
Yeah.
Like, everyone wants to manage, you know, I'm managing the deer. But truthfully, you're managing the plants that the deer are utilizing either as forage or cover.
Not just that, the soil where those plants grow.
And you have to take away from the focus, the narrow focus on, let's say, the animal you're looking to harvest, but look at the resources and that which they're utilizing, and that's what you're doing. So to break these up, you're looking at the plant biology, which sounds boring as heck, but anything from germination, growing season, blooming, maturation of the species, when they're senescing, they're going into dormancy stage, all that plays a role into why and when these elements that we're going to talk about here in a second get utilized across a property. It's very specific, species specific, and when to manage, let's say, hardwoods, when to manage Cerisa lespidiza, when to manage food plots, when
bush, honey,
manage,
suckle, autumn,
all
olive.
These things, they're different windows because they're different plants, but you have to look at them and know them specifically to make the biggest impact. So here we go. January.
I think January is one of those months that is, if I'm a landowner, that's like one of my favorite months to knock stuff out. It's cold. There's no ticks. There's no snakes. A lot of the work, I mean, this summer we were cutting and I about ran into a copperhead.
Yep.
There's a lot of things that I love about working in January.
Yep.
And so it's a great time to do a lot of work. One of my favorites during this time of the year is edge feathering.
Yep.
We're just coming out of deer season. Maybe I've set on several food plots and I go, okay, they're coming out on the other end, or they're coming out 90 yards away rather than 40 yards away. They're hanging out in that end of the food plot. How can I get to that end of the food plot, or how can I bring them to this end of the food plot through edge feathering and steering or manipulating their trails with felling of trees?
That's a fantastic hunting strategy. But then from the habitat side of that is we're putting acres of early successional cover, shrubs, woody cover, structure
young
at the right
forest.
Height, young forest, all of that right back into where it should be, a transition from field into hardwood timber. That's like gone. I mean, pretty much gone from the landscape. And a lot of people, you read publications, things like that. Not many deer people talk about edge feathering, period.
No.
But when you read up on it, you know, a lot of them talking 10, 20 yards into, you know, from your field edge into your timber. I don't care if someone goes 50. Like, that type of habitat is super important. So
the way I described it to a person the other day on social media was picture a lake shore or a beach shore. Some places the soil is different and the beach erodes further back into the woods or into the landscape. The lake erodes back and you have this big long jag cove going way back, when other places it may just be rock and it's slamming against it for mm-hmm. hundreds of years. Same way with edge feathering. If you look at your edge of your food plot or crop field, okay, I just want to get 10 yards all the way. I just want to create a better edge. Well, then as you start going down that field edge, you notice where there's a whole string of species, I don't even know, let's just say elm or hackberry, that's going, you know, they're not as beneficial, or I'm not really, I've got plenty of hackberry, I need to thin these out.
I don't get into good quality species
I'm not cutting
50,
a bunch of oaks,
yeah.
So I'm going to go ahead and bounce back there. That's great.
Sure.
Or if you're just starting the edge feathering, the first year, just try to put 10 yards all the way around your food plots.
That's the 80 grit.
That's 80
grit. Come back 220 it when you really slow down, take a look at it, be like, all those other species are bad too. It's not doing anything good. I'm going to get in there and cut it.
Yeah.
Finish it out.
Yeah.
That's edge feathering pretty much. And
I mean, that's year one, two, three, four.
Beautiful time of the year to do it. There's no leaves on the trees, so they fall and fell a lot easier. You can really see and have a better prediction of where the trees are going to go. So this is a perfect time of the year to do edge
feathering. And guys,
feathering.
Don't worry. This isn't a three-hour podcast. We're going to explain it when we get to it for the first time.
Yep.
But in future months, if we're talking edge feathering,
faster.
We'll just say edge feathering.
Yep.
And I think with edge feathering, that's one of those things, like you said, deer guys don't talk about it a lot. Sometimes I feel like we're bringing up when we start talking edge feathering to some people, it's something that's never been covered. It's like, I've never heard of that. And it's like, it's been around forever. Like
I bet edge
feathering was around before food plots were.
Yeah, probably. Probably. But I can, like, every game species at some portion of the year needs cover just like that. Like, has to have it to persist and do really, really well. And it's one of those things that's so missing from the landscape. Like, we talk about this all the time. I was just thinking about it earlier. Man, I love deer, but sometimes I just wish they were more picky.
Yeah.
I don't mean that, but I mean that from a standpoint of it would make our jobs a little bit easier, because it would be like, when I say they need it, but some places don't have it, but they're still there. So it's like, deer, you ruined my point.
Yeah.
But like quail from Kyle and Frank's, if it's not there,
they're not there.
They are not there.
Yeah.
Deer are just very adaptable.
Or rough grouse.
Yes.
Even
some
of
turkeys
these,
in some places some, now.
Yeah.
You like massive wood blocks. They just don't have them because they don't have what they need as a part of their yearly
And I'll never call myself a deer guy. And there's one big reason why. If I pride myself on being a deer guy, hey, I can help you grow giant deer. Yeah, that's one thing that we've done and proven with past clients and the clients that we're working with. But it would not make me feel good to say I only care about big deer and I continuing to kill 160s or whatever, and then somebody kills one of those guys down there in Atlanta, Georgia, or around the suburbs where deer eating kudzu and Chinese privet, and they're killing 200s.
Yep.
Like, it kind of proves the point of maybe it's not all about just what you're doing. They're a very adaptable species. And so what we do, focus on all the species. Like, if we've got a client who's killing giant deer but then saying, hey, we're seeing more pheasants than we've ever seen, or we're seeing more quail than we've ever seen, we know we're doing something really, really special with the habitat. And that's our goal.
And we know the byproduct of all this type of management that we're doing, it creates
giant deer.
So it's not like – That's not a focus. We don't consider it. Obviously, we consider it. But it's one of those things of, I know it's going to happen when you do this. So, edge feathering, super important.
That's right. Bedding thickets, next thing. Temporary forest openings, whatever you want to call them. Miniature clear cuts.
And people get scared away from that term, but I am not scared at all to use it, because every single year, every single client that comes back and says, guys, I did it. And it was crazy good. Yeah. It's like, I want everyone to call it a clear cut. No one should be scared of implementing these on the property because they're so beneficial.
They're not that big. They're less than 2 acres.
Yeah.
Most time when you hear clear cut, you think of somebody clear cut the farm and it's 200 acres clear cut. And you're going, oh, my gosh. We're talking about less than 2 acres strategically placed on the landscape.
Fragmenting the landscape.
To work with food plots, to work with water holes, to work with terrain, to where we can really kind of directionally place deer travel patterns based on these bedding thickets.
The biggest thing is to put deer in the right areas where you're not bumping them, where they feel safe, where the wind probably is swirling, where, again, you're not bumping, you can traverse the farm, and that's where they're at during daylight hours. And you just know that.
Yeah.
You do it during this time frame because you got a chainsaw in your hand.
It's a lot easier to fell trees
dormant.
Without
yep.
leaves. At the same time, a lot of your understory trees, your flowering dogwoods, even your elms, some of your hickories,
maples,
have already started forming buds. Yes, in January, they already have buds.
Put them on the ground,
and deer start eating them. We've got one client that tested a pile of corn with felled trees, and deer were eating the felled trees before they'd even touched the pile of corn. And, in fact, they said in the snow there was way more tracks. It looked like a barnyard with tracks everywhere around felled trees versus the corn pile. So we've got a lot of clients doing this at the same time, but it's food on the ground, it's immediate cover, and it's not just for immediate food and immediate cover, but this is something that's going to last for years and years and years. And managing it with prescribed fire, you still keep it in a very beneficial state. Not only that, it helps with rough grouse, it helps with woodland species or oak savanna birds, you adding diversity to your landscape.
Rabbits,
you're
helping wild turkey nesting cover. The list goes on and on and on.
So, but bedding thickets, get them in during January is a great time, but there's a lot of other times you can do it too.
Timber stand improvement, TSI. A lot of people hear TSI, don't know what stands for. There's also FSI, forest stand improvements. Whatever you want to term it, it's going in and making the forest species, the timber, you're improving those stands. And from a wildlife perspective, the goal is to either improve the mast production in that area so you have more forage, because that's really the only benefit that a lot of those tree species then have for wildlife is the food production. So we can increase it by eliminating competition in and around the crowns of specific trees like your white oaks, bur oaks, red oaks, black oaks. And so you're going in and you're selecting poorly shaped trees, densely stacked areas that have poor value. You're going in, you're just selectively and intentionally singling out trees to remove, to improve, and reach your goals.
You're killing the weeds out of your timber. Yeah, a lot of times, sure. if you want to think about it from a crop field standpoint or a garden standpoint, you're always dealing with weeds or species you don't want in your fields that are going to lower your yield. If you've got weed trees, lower value, invasive species in your timber, you're lowering the yield you will get out of your crop trees.
Whether it is your purpose is for timber production in a specific area, or your purpose is for more wildlife friendly, this is the time of the year to do TSI. Again, you got a chainsaw in your hand, you can cover a ton of ground. A ton.
So far, the three main things are going to make one of the biggest impacts on the whole landscape if you're in timber country.
Oh,
even
man,
if you're in crop country, though, and you have little wooded draws, these three things would greatly improve what you have going.
Greatly so, improve it, for sure.
Chainsaw.
Yep.
That's it. Hopefully you got a chainsaw for Christmas.
Oh, absolutely.
Next up, prepare fire lines. Of course, fire lines, you could be burning. There's a big gap in the burning period if you want to do dormant season fires or growing season fires. Prepping fire lines is great. It could be bush hogging old fields around the edge and putting in a disc line to prep, or it could be cutting a lane through the timber and getting ready to blow out the fire line or blow out the leaves with a backpack blower. But prepping, so when you do get those dry days later in January even, or February or March, you're already there and your lines are in place, so you don't have to do much maintenance to get it ready. So when you finally do get those dry days, lower humidity, you can put the matches.
It's definitely a preparation time frame.
Yeah,
you got to do it because you're gonna have a ball game or something to go to the day before the great weather comes for prescribed fire, and you better have your fire lines in and prepared. Doesn't take much time to do them.
Next one is kind of a joke, but not really. Cut eastern red cedars. It's a great month to cut eastern red cedar. You're going to hear this one repetitive for the next 12 months. It's always a great time to cut eastern red cedar, but it's always a great time to be looking at what is on your property that's taking up space from other species that could be way more beneficial to the wildlife.
For sure.
I think a lot of times we focus on what we can add. I've said this over and over, but we look at so-and-so or whatever is being sold to me on television or in the sporting goods store that I can add to my land to make it more beneficial. But so many times we need to look at what I need to take away first to make my landscape more beneficial.
Yeah.
Next up.
Removing first.
Remove.
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 There's not a ton of situations where it's like, okay, you get to the – it's kind of like the maintenance phase. Like, you have to get to the – removing phase first before you kind of add and supplement things.
If you have a house, you have to get rid of the old furniture before you go bring in the new furniture. And a lot of times,
declutter.
You have to declutter the
spring
farm before you try to even think about bringing other stuff in.
Yeah, 100%. I honestly wish people would go and look at the place before you get online to buy something. Go and look at what needs to be taken out first.
Yeah.
Think of it like a stuffy, like your grandma's house with all the pictures on the wall. There's so much clutter and things that you just need to take it away and then look, say, do I need to add or supplement anything else? That's when you come in and maybe you purchase a product. Maybe you do something, spruce it up. But many times it is let's remove first.
Yeah. So next up, we have dormant season disking in grass-dominated fields. So if you have your fields, you've planted whatever – a mix of native grass and you need more forbs, or your old CRP contract is up but you've left it in CRP and it's kind of dominated by Indian grass, big blue stem, or switchgrass, and you're like, I need more forbs, I need more food out there, I need more forbs so I have more insects for pheasants or quail or more deer food. Dormant season disking.
This is
to promote annual, basically we're promoting annual forbs like common ragweed or pokeberry or old field aster. We're trying to add diversity. So dormant season disking, great time to do it. January.
Absolutely.
Next up,
a lot of that can be too, like in old fields. You mentioned like CRP fields, but this old fields that have gone to more grass dominant, you will see a shift if you're a guy who's managed old fields for a while, less forb dominated into grasses. This is when you come back in those old field situations and add in the forbs just by disking and exposing a little bit of the ground. Doesn't have to be, it's not very deep tillage at all. It's just basically one single pass. You can do them in strips, do them in blocks, whatever's necessary. Dormant season disking. Next one is building roads or just mapping, planning out roads, especially if the ground is frozen. You can get equipment in there. There's not a lot of extra debris to be able to clear roads. You know, you don't have like the summertime, just vegetation everywhere. You can see, you can make a clear path. So this is a good time to go ahead and mark them, get them cut in, dozed in. Cause then it's not super sloppy.
And they could also be great fire lines. If you know, you know how much by now, if you've listened to podcasts much, you know how much we love roads on the exterior of your property right around your borders. So fire lines, access trails for hunting, it's a great time to put them in. And while putting them in, you're creating fire lines as well.
Yep.
Lastly, for January, scout. And this is kind of a combination scout / shed hunt. I know there's guys already finding sheds. And I'll be honest with you guys, I'm not a huge shed hunter because time is very limited for me on the farm. And so I'll always go, should I shed hunt or should I run a chainsaw or should I do habitat work? I'll always choose the habitat work because that's more fun and it's more impactful for my hunting, for me. So, you know, not to say you don't choose shed hunting, but I am going to say, I think sometimes we get a little bit too much addicted to shed hunting when we're missing a phenomenal window to be putting habitat on the ground.
I'd rather be adding food to the landscape than going to the best areas and pushing deer out when they're already stressed.
Yeah.
Bumping them around. But
yeah,
that's it is a good time to scout. It is a good time to get out and walk a property and get to know
look
how deer
sign
it.
And yep. figure out how you can
plan
put
out
in a bedding thicket or put in edge feathering to figure out how you can manipulate that next to your tree stand.
Because we got a lot of good months for that. Those activities to continue to occur. So
for
February.
Sure. February is very similar to January, but you're getting a little bit closer to that growing season. Trees are starting to push buds a little bit more. But at the same time, you know, here in the Midwest, that's when you start getting some more lower humidity days. So you can start really looking at fire. Prescribed fire being a phenomenal tool in February. So that's why fire lines prep in January is more important than February. But at the same time, January, you can still do edge feathering. You can still do bedding thickets. You can still do timber stand improvement. But that's where we want to touch on the idea of different ways of timber stand improvement. So
There's so many different ways to skin a cat. Everyone knows that. Well,
how
what
do you kill
I do
a
this?
Tree?
Should I do that? Should I do this? It's like, guys, there's probably 10 different ways I could tell you to do it. But most importantly, go out there and just make sure it gets done. That's what we need to tackle first, is make sure that this work gets done. We're talking about, you know, the difference between felling or girdling or using the hack and squirt method. Whatever it is, make sure the work gets done. But if you were to ask us, put us a, you know, gun to our head and say, what do you guys typically do? We're pretty much felling trees or girdling them and applying herbicide to that girdle and trees. We don't want to fell or just, you know, just because it's quicker, it's easier, it's safer, whatever it may be. We just don't want tons and tons of stems dead in a fire unit because everything's going to get burnt down the road. So typically we're putting it on the ground. That's food on the ground. We're utilizing that stump and that root system for additional forage and cover. But really, if you go out and you just cut the tree down, if you don't even use herbicide, we talked about this pre-show, most places you are in so much need of woody, shrubby cover
unless
and buds.
If you're in the southeast or southern part of the United States,
where your growing season's so long,
woody stem count is too high typically. You're wanting more herbaceous cover.
Yeah.
That's a huge difference between our management in the south versus the Midwest and north.
And north.
Yeah.
Usually there's not enough. There's not enough heavy stem cover. So if you don't treat a single, unless it's an invasive or a really noxious tree, if you don't treat any of the other ones.
Tulip poplar would be one where I'm like, we might want to treat because those things grow. Or
they do
a sycamore.
Crazy. Yep.
They grow so fast, and sometimes sassafras. They grow so fast, they can be poop right back up to
eight, ten foot tall
in
quick.
No time. But for the most part, if you
80 grit knit,
just cut them.
Yeah. cut it because now you got a lot of beneficial things. And you can always go back 2-3 years down the road once you do get resprouting. Go back in with a backpack sprayer, spray them, do a foliar application. A lot easier to hit that bigger target and get those killed than a very small stem with herbicide when you're trying to go and just knock down a couple 3 acres worth of TSI or edge feathering or bedding thicket, stopping every stem that you get to and treating it. That's time consuming.
Yeah, that's right.
Preparing fire lines, the prescribed fire in the timber, great months. Usually we get 5-6 days probably in the month that, typically speaking, that are really good fire days. Yeah.
And we're typically on the road. Prescribed fire in the timber, north slopes, where moisture is usually high all the other months out of the year. You're looking in this, you want to burn on the north slope when the leaves have fallen and there's no leaves on the trees and the humidity's low enough and the leaves are dried out enough that you can carry a fire through it. So February is a great month to burn north slopes. So if you've done some bedding thickets on north slopes and you're trying to get some great regeneration of herbaceous plants or grasses, cut them in January, burn them in February.
Definitely. Frost seeding clover. Man,
yep. Depends on where you're at, you know.
It could be early or it could be late in some portions of the region. So we're trying to hit that middle ground. But frost seeding clover, typically 4 to 5 frosts left between that, I guess let's say just the last frost that's generally expected in your area. Make sure you're getting out there and frosting that clover. Perfect way to freshen up clover plots, fill them in, or just establish new ones in existing food plots or creating new areas for food plots.
Yeah, and for me, we're going into that now of trying to really manage our food plots, even though there's a habitat focus year in the life of land manager. How many times do you see when we're looking at this year in the life of land manager? When's the ideal time to, let's just say, frost seed? February or March, depending on where you're at. But how many times do we see it going, I forgot to do that. Let's try it in April. Let's try it in May. Maybe we'll get a few more rains. And we miss it. And then you just waste that seed, wasted your time, and you didn't get the results you were looking for. That's why having this laid out for you in this podcast will help you hopefully eliminate those times where you left the family and you ran to the farm for a day to do some work and you did something and you got zero results out of it. What a waste.
Yeah.
Maybe you had some enjoyment out of it.
Yeah,
what
maybe
a waste.
You cleared your mind, but you still want to
accomplish
nothing. You can clear your mind and get results if you follow things like this. And again, we're not saying that there's not leniencies or tolerances with some of this stuff, but this right here is going to get you really fine-tuned to what you should be doing and when you should be doing it.
Yeah.
Another dormant season disking. We talked about it in the grass.
Oh, you skipped Mayfield. One of my favorites.
I did.
Cut Eastern Red Cedars.
Yeah. Don't forget about that one, guys. But this is still a great window to do dormant season disking. And don't forget about doing it around the edges of your food plots. You don't have to plant every single square inch of a food plot. Many of the edges, probably if you haven't done your edge feathering, or even if you have, go and do those edges and just get annual weeds growing along the edge, transitioned into your shrubby woody cover, then transition into your hardwoods. Just go around the edge a pass or two, really, really light disc, and then plant the interior of that.
Yeah. Another thing you could do is plant natives.
Absolutely, you could.
Yeah. Plant native warm season grasses or forbs.
Yep. 100%.
So that's all for February.
Yep.
March.
Ooh.
March is a great month.
I can hear the stuff crackling and burning right now.
Oh, man. If it's not too wet. So some years, March is a wash. Other years, it's a great time to get fire on the ground. That's why having your fire lines in place is important, because you may go through 2 weeks where you're like, it is so wet. And it can happen so fast in March. You get high winds,
dry,
and lots of sun,
fast.
And it dries out fast.
Really, really
and
fast.
All of a sudden, all of a sudden, you're ready for fire. Oh, you got to take that one dry day to prep a fire line, and then all of a sudden,
your moisture level changes, or you don't have the right wind, and you're out. So that's why January. That's why we put prep fire lines January, February, because March is really, you might get. You might get no days, but you might get 10 days that are decent fire days, and that's when you put the flame on the ground. You don't want to be messing around making those fire lines. Well, we've burnt grass fields or prairies 2 days after a rain.
Yeah.
In March, because we got high winds and we got sun, and it just dried it out. Boom, you could burn.
So we got another great time plant our frost seed clover, depending on where you're at. You know, if you're still in the northern part of the country and you still have some snow on the ground and you've got a couple more frosts coming, it's a great time to frost seed.
We're starting to get into like that, the first parts of green up. We're getting some winter annuals probably coming into food plots. Soil temperatures are increasing a little bit. So with that, probably in the southern portions of the country or southern Midwest, you're getting some non-native cool season grasses that are starting to photosynthesize, and that's a great time to go ahead and apply an herbicide application to hit those. As soon as they're photosynthesizing, greening up, taking that herbicide, they're depleted their root system, the nutrient stored there, and boom, you zap them. You get them out before natives have really started to grow. So you can do a non-selective herbicide like glyphosate application and just hit them, move on. That area's changed forever,
hopefully.
Yep.
Next one you could do, depending on where you're at, you're starting to get some weeds starting to germinate in your perennial plots, your perennial clover. You can hit them with a pre-emergent herbicide while they're still young or right before they start to germinate. It's a great time of the year to do that. Another thing you can do is plant natives.
Yes.
Once again, you think of planting season being that April, May, June, or that August, September. Well, planting season, depending on what you're doing, could be almost – it really depends. But when we're looking at natives, we're looking at that dormant season.
50 degrees, 55 degrees is about the top end for soil temperature for forbs. I think it's about 60, 65 for grasses, ideally. And so – Much of March, you can go ahead and do that in a lot of places.
Yep. Next thing you could do is cut eastern red cedars.
Yes.
if you didn't know.
And then
finish TSIing. Yeah. So, you know, this is kind of that time frame where you probably wouldn't do it in the south, but you could still be doing it in the north. You don't want to be TSIing, doing large amounts of TSI when you're really pushing nutrients out, when your trees are really starting to put on buds and leaves and starting to green up. Just because, you know, there are some bats in certain species that you really don't want to go and disturb by cutting a whole bunch of trees. And so about March, we shut down the TSI edge feathering bedding thickets, and we wait until all leaves are on, and then we may pick that back up again in late May or June.
Yep.
And we'll continue that until, you know, August or even into the
herbicide. If you're using that on the trees that you've felled or trying to hack, that mobilization of nutrients up from the root system up to the canopy pushes out a lot of herbicide. So it's just kind of ineffective. And there's other things that we can be doing for sure this window.
Like cutting
transitioning
cedars.
Yeah. We're planting natives.
Yeah.
Or transitioning into April with soil temperatures climbing. We're seeing that. We're going basically from that dormant season now into the early spring that we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
This transitional, okay, so now we shift and start to incorporate other things into our management during the early spring months.
Yeah,
April.
April is, you know, if you're going now into the Midwest and upper and even the northern states, it's April could be the month that you're spraying non-native cool season grasses, your turf grasses, your smooth brome, your tall fescue, removing those. So it really depends on what month and your location for when you're going to spray them. But you're looking for those fields to be the only thing green, and all your natives are still dormant that are going to be out in your old field. So removing those. And that's one of the biggest things to me. If you're looking at a landscape of going, okay, If this is strictly recreational property and I have timber and I have old fields, TSI, bedding thickets, edge feathering, those three things are the biggest impact in my timber, and old field management by spraying out turf grasses and non-natives and invasives. And boom, if you just do those five things alone, your property and habitat is going to be greatly improved, probably more than any other project you could do on the whole landscape.
Yeah, there's humongous possibilities there. So depending on where you're at, yeah, cool season grass is probably a great window to begin thinking about spraying, prepping it. Maybe it's prepping your seed drill. Maybe it's prepping sprayers, making sure everything's ready for the growing season that is rapidly approaching. You can do, you know, equipment maintenance as well. So if you're down south, to make clover plots that much more diverse through the actual growing season, provide them shade. You can even consider starting to plant buckwheat, cowpeas, or milo into the clover plots to add that diversity and make basically those clover stands that much more attractive. And again, shade that clover so it doesn't go dormant during the months of July, August, when it's super hot and dry, especially in the south. Up north, this wouldn't be the window to do that. It may not be as necessary, but if you're wanting for long-term, the longevity of clover plots, a great window to be able to do that. Of course, Eastern Red Cedar, you can get after those jokers. And then prescribed fire, too. Don't forget April. We burnt right before turkey season last year, timber. A lot of people probably would have been looking at us like, man, that got aggressive with that fire.
A lot of people say, you know, you don't want to cut it off when turkeys can be nesting or other birds can be nesting, but it's kind of site specific. If you feel that you can sneak a fire in there and not be burning up nests.
And it might be small little pockets or units, multiple little units. Yeah. And there's
that fire that we did was amazing. We had a lot of a lot of brambles and a lot of understory trees were already pushing up and already had a lot
of dogwoods, redbud,
limbs or leaves,
maples
pushing, and we roasted it and knocked them all back.
Which was the goal, though.
Which was the goal, by golly.
This is that window where it's like, okay, goal dependent. A lot of times you can get fire still going in April with the right weather.
Next up, May.
I love May. It's one, chase turkeys, but then two,
food plot season.
You got to love prepping for food plots and just getting on a tractor, drilling in some hopefully diverse forages, opportunities. And it's just fun. Midwest, Mid-Atlantic, the North, this is your window. This is your time to shine. When the crops go in your area, if you have crops, probably a good indication you should probably consider planting a food plot.
Next up, start kind of removing invasives.
Yes.
You can really start hammering out bush honeysuckle, autumn olive, Johnson grass, even though
Tree of Heaven.
It may be really young Johnson grass. You can be looking, if you're down south, go ahead and start getting after it. And that's just, we're going to be waylaying invasives from now, from May till, until they're all gone.
until they're done.
You'll see all the way into November we're talking about invasives. So pretty much during from now till November we're going to be talking about invasives.
And if there's a priority, I'm going to place invasive species for the next few months very, very high on that list. Very high.
Not only priority for the next couple of months, but every property has your invasives. You have your non-natives that you need to take care of. And you need to remove them. And so that's why it's important to be IDing the plants. Learn the plants and learn the trees on your property. If you buy a house, you try to learn everything you can about that house, whether it's an HVAC or a wood stove or what kind of
septic
shingles or septic or a lagoon, surely. Like, you want to learn everything you can about it. So if you own land, let's learn what we have on it.
Let's learn
what species we need to avoid.
You can't make proper management decisions when you can't ID plants.
No.
You can't.
No.
I don't know. I should have thought of a really good analogy, but it's like something. I don't know. I'll think of it.
Is this my chance to rant about Miscanthus?
No, not yet.
Oh. Well, so Miscanthus, it's one of these things that if you don't know your tree species, you probably shouldn't consider planting non-natives because there's a new fad, there's a new thing where a certain species of Miscanthus is out to where it's called sterile, but you can hop right over to a species that actually was one of them that helped create the hybrid, the Miscanthus gigantus, and we go to Miscanthus sinensis, which is Chinese silvergrass. And if you don't know the difference between the two, not knowing the difference between a highly invasive plant and a plant that right now is considered sterile. Huge problem. So ID your plants, learn your plants, learn your trees. Super easy. iNaturalist app on your phone if you have a smartphone, and start learning your trees. And especially start learning your invasives, because from May till November, we're going to be getting after it.
You better be having some herbicide ready.
And it's not, it should not be overwhelming.
No.
It may take a little bit the first few years, but if you stay on it, year four, even year three, we're going to sit back, put it in cruise control, and start reaping the rewards.
And a lot of times, I had this discussion early in the week, you may not ever reach 100% eradication. But if you have a problem, address the problem and get it knocked back to where it is a very manageable level every single year. It's not overwhelming, but those first couple treatments might be overwhelming to you. And you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I had to do this. I'm taken away from other things. That is super important, because several years down the road, when you don't address it and you've forgotten about it, you're going to look back and say, oh my gosh, I can't believe I just put this in the back of my mind. Now I have years and years and years of hard work to bring this field back or convert this timber stand back into something that's more productive, because I just neglected it. Don't neglect it. Chip away at it. You can get down to a very manageable level in a few short years of intense management of natives, or intense management of invasives, excuse me. Another thing during May is, this is a great time. We've had a flush of vegetation growing. Get that first mowing along your roads done.
Yep.
Just go in there, clip it. That's about the only time we're really mowing, especially yeah. early spring. You're not going to have a turkey hopefully laying an egg, or quails.
Probably not laying in your trails, because they were bush hogged.
Yeah.
At the end of growing season.
Last year.
Last year.
It's pretty safe time to do it. You could do that during this time. You can also, down south, you've got probably good regeneration and growth at this time, certainly, Bahia or Bermuda grasses.
Yep.
You can go and target those like you would have the non-native cool season grasses. Remove those if that's in your management plan. You're not having cattle. These odd areas, whatever it may be, hit those. And if you're doing strip spraying in old fields, maybe you have too many grasses and you chose not to disc, or you didn't disc, spray out a couple sections. There's some forbs. They'll come back in. It's growing season.
If you're in the south or even in the Midwest and it's late May and leaves are already on now, you could do a little bit of bedding thicket expansion or your clear cut expansion. Just take 10 yards all the way around the ring. I mean, Mississippi State did a great thing on mineral stumping.
Mm-hmm.
That you can be knocking that stuff out and adding some more cover, but getting some great stump sprouts that are highly sought after by the deer. So you could be doing the expansion of your bedding thickets during May.
Yep. Late May is great for that. June.
We're going into June now. Once again, removing invasive species.
Yep.
Cerisa lespediza, if you've got that in there, it's long before a bloom, go ahead and get after it. IDing what plants you have. Spotted knapweed.
Yep.
If you have coral berry or buckbrush, that's one thing I want to go back and say, probably before June. So I just mentioned that, and we're now in June, but let's go back to May. I know here in the Midwest and parts of the northern Midwest, even down south, coral berry or buckbrush can be a little bit aggressive. It's if it's taken over some of your old fields, it's a great time to spray
old fields. Or you see it a lot in woodlots where there's cattle.
Old fence rows,
yeah,
too.
A bunch. It's not one, like, it's just one of those, like, undesirables. It's,
yeah.
It can consume some areas.
It's a little aggressive.
Yeah, but it's not like, it's not a Cerisa lespediza, but it's still one of those things that, yeah, I'd rather something else be growing there. So during the growing season, if you get too long into it, those leaves on buckbrush get very, very waxy, a very tough cuticle area. So it's very hard for herbicide to actually adhere and not run off, but get into the actual cells of the leaves. So if you're choosing to spray that out or treat it, it's best to do it at the very beginning of spring, May timeframe,
yep.
where the leaves are more susceptible to taking in nutrients before they get that waxy coating on them. And so there's many other leaves like that, like Oriental yep. bittersweet, any type of ivies that you may be dealing with if you're in a suburban area, the same thing goes for them. They're very waxy later into the growing season, so most times you have to go in early and treat them as a green backup.
So back to June, we've got you could be expanding bedding thickets again. Now, when we say expanding, we may create small ones, half acre or less, but the biggest part of our bedding thickets get created in that dormant season, December, January, February, March, rather than going in and cutting all our bedding thickets in June.
Honestly, it's a really good time frame. Because most people don't go in the first time and cut enough. They're very hesitant to go in and just clear cut. So yeah. they're going to leave some trees. Go back in June when it's leafed out. You have to have sunlight on the ground, getting to the ground throughout the day in those areas to get the regeneration. If it's shaded or partially shaded, you're going to have poorer success or the not the regeneration you want. So go back in, cut the trees that you should have cut in January, get them gone. But it's a great time to see how that area is responding, how sunlight's working in that area now that you have canopies fully out.
So another thing you could do is some more edge feathering.
Yep.
And then last thing, we have monitor plant communities, improve plant ID skills. So once again, we're looking for more invasives. We're looking to start trying to ID what plants are actually growing in my old fields. You know, June, there's going to be a lot of flowering plants.
Bunch, yeah.
And so you can start IDing and knowing what's there and if it's good, bad, or ugly.
And monitor the browse situations there, too. Like, there's so many species that should be green. There should be ample forage across the landscape, and this is the time in the window to see what are deer preferring, what are turkeys preferring, where are they at, what are they doing, how are they using this habitat? They have so much available to them, but what are the species that are they keying in during this time window, and how can I best promote them down the road? So a lot of it's just observation this time frame.
Yeah.
July is really very similar to June.
Yeah, it is. Still hot, but still obnoxious.
Still ticks.
Still but
snakes,
July, you're
spiders.
Like, oh, we might be getting into seed ticks now.
Yeah, yeah,
but
for
removing
sure.
invasives. Once again, pre-bloom on Cerisa lespediza. If you're here in the Midwest, we're trying to manage our old fields. So if there is multi-floral rose growing in your old fields. Japanese honeysuckle or Cerisa lespediza or Johnson grass. We're going around and
we're sweet gums.
We're spot spraying our we've got a herbicide tank in the back.
Yep.
Filled with glyphosate and
or you can do a cocktail, add some 2,4-D into
yeah.
it. Yeah. And
we're driving around with the wand in our hand and we're just spraying stuff and killing it out. From our old fields, field edges, food plot edges, whatever it is. Our edge feathered areas. We're just trying to ID what's going on. So it's hot, but get a little bit of a cool breeze. You don't want to be spraying when it's too hot, but mm-hmm. find those days when.
Or too early in the morning when there's heavy, heavy dews.
Yeah.
You really got to be considering that stuff.
But you're just driving around spraying.
It's more fun than what you think.
Yeah,
like,
you got the earbuds in.
And you're just pow, pow,
yeah.
pow, killing
and you're
stuff.
Just spraying stuff.
Make an improvement. And honestly, don't worry about. Oh my gosh, it was the size of a truck I just sprayed out. So what? There's going to be probably ragweed that comes back in there.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah, or there's a really beneficial species just right over that's going to make seed that year and hopefully fall over and
yeah.
reseed that the next year.
Yep, bingo.
Oh, man. So once again, we're monitoring the browse levels on natives at food plots. So July is a good time. You know, you've had maybe two months of growing in your food plots. You're going, ooh, those soybeans don't look too good. You're going, okay, maybe I need to think about what I have going on here. So July, early July is a great time. You could salvage a food plot by going, okay, it's being overbrowsed. I'm going to drill in some milo, or I'm going to drill in some sun hemp, or I'm going to drill in some cowpeas, something else to try to salvage what's going on in my food plot if
something
it's getting overbrowsed.
That's drought tolerant.
Yeah.
Don't just add more soybeans.
Once again, we're monitoring our plant ID skills, and we're trying to improve upon them. So every month there's going to be new flowering species on your farm. On, you know, eastern gamma grass is going to be flowering earlier in the summer than, let's say, Indian grass. So looking at those seed heads, trying to ID it, know what it is, take pictures of it so you can start remembering what you have and if it's good, bad, or ugly. And so July, another great time to be out there doing that. Prescribe fire if dry.
Absolutely.
If dry.
That's the key. But usually humidity levels for us are really pretty high. But there's windows and there's opportunities, especially, you can get it done in the right areas. They're not very numerous days, let's say.
And it's going to be a miserable fire, most likely. That's why even small patches would be great.
You can do
small
patches.
You've got old fields, a five-acre old field. Well, cut it in half. Just put a fire line all the way around it and split one right in the middle and just try to burn it if it gets dry enough.
You'll have diversity come back for sure in the next couple of years. Mixing up that rotation of when that fire gets on the ground will change the expression of plants in those areas for sure.
Next up, trim trails, keep roads from being taken over. So, we've mowed the trails. Now we're trying to cut the limbs off the road. That way we're not slapping windshields or slapping
mirrors,
shoulders or whatever, or briars catching as you're driving by on your UTV or four-wheeler. July is a great time. Most of the growing has taken place now. Trimming those roads up, getting them ready for deer season. Great time. It's a kind of a recreational aesthetic side of it, but it overall, from a hunting standpoint, you're just making your property more usable and leave less scent and just easier to access. So it's a great time. And then also July is a very hot month, so it's a great time to monitor water holes and water resources on your property. So if you go through a severe drought and you notice most of your deer have left, it's probably an indicator that they're having to go somewhere else for water. So that might be a great indication of going, okay, how can I get more water on my farm? And so, you know, there's some great government cost share to put in water, wildlife watering holes. If you're looking at your property in July and you're going, man, this drought's really killing me, my deer are gone, maybe that's a pretty good indicator that you need to put some water on your farm.
Definitely.
August.
Yes.
Hate this month, but it's got my birthday in it. And
we've talked so many times about August, the month of August around this place, and it's like, take me to Wyoming somewhere else. I just want to get out.
Yeah.
Gosh.
August is a great time for the last pass with the mower on the roadways. Most shooting lanes and travel corridors and old fields, prairies.
Start prepping for hunting season.
Yeah.
You know, where do you want deer traveling through your old fields? Snake them by a setup or make them, you know, cut through a pinch a little bit more than years past. Whatever you had kind of experienced or observed in those January months when you're scouting, you can really affect deer movement for the next few months in these areas just by mowing a path.
Spraying invasives like Cerisa lespediza post-bloom or during bloom. And then Johnson grass by this point is going nuts. If you have it, you can be spraying it out. Prescribed fire once again if it's dry. Upper Midwest and Midwest, you're going to be planting fall food plots. Some guys down south, or you guys down south, it's probably a little bit too early because it can really get really hot, really dry for you. Same thing with the Midwest guys. That's what
and
we
you
got
can
with
get,
this year.
You can get plants that have too much growing season left if you're planting them early and they mature, then they're not attractive during the actual
oats,
fall months
wheat,
when you need
cereal,
them.
Rye, all that. Not a great
time if you're down south. No. Don't do it too early.
Treat unwanted trees with herbicide. Of course, August, depending on Midwest, upper Midwest, they're starting to send nutrients from up top down to the roots to store it up for the winter. So if you inject them with herbicide, it's going to be a great kill. So
we've seen some trees in some areas that it gets so hot and so dry that they're weakened at this point. They start to dry out bad.
Yes. So that's a great thing. If you've got trees out in your old fields, you're like, I need to get rid of those, it's a great time to treat them. Last thing in August, fix roadways to create ideal slope and runoff. grade for fall hunting travel. So if you've got roads on your property and you're trying to combat erosion, this is one of the best times to be fixing your roadways, putting the ideal slope. We want water to be running off your roads as quickly as possible and not running down the road, but running straight off into the onto the adjoining landscape. And so if you do the work in August and with all your road travel through the hunting season and through the fall with
rains,
freezing and thawing coming up, you can really put the shape of the road that you need to keep your road as passable for as long as possible. So it's a great time to be fixing them up with the box blade or blade or dozer, getting them ready. September.
Woo! We finally made it. Now we're really kind of changing and getting out of like that the heat of the summer, senescence, maturity of a lot of plants, a lot of early successional plants is really happening. There's quite a bit of a shift here in September that we're seeing from plant species, but also then directly affecting the management of things. But food plots is really, really big. September time frame, early September, and then getting late September in the south for planting your fall food plots. And the one thing that I think is hopefully growing is the broadcasting of cover crops in ag fields. If
yep.
you're a deer hunter, to spruce up your stand site to make maybe a 50-acre field much more attractive in your location. Plant 2 acres.
Yep. Lower stress levels during the winter months.
Yep.
I think that's one big thing that a guy sent me a video of it was kind of a side-by-side comparison of one food plot variety versus another, and one was dominated by brassicas. Of course, right now, looks amazing. There's still leaves everywhere. But then you look at the greens or the grains, and you're going, yeah, that's just a lot of greens. And I said, well, let's just keep monitoring it through the winter months because those
that's
brassica leaves are going to get browse, and that those greens are going to start pumping it out. So that's why a lot of cover crops have those cereal grains, wheat, oats, rye, in them, because they can take a lot of abuse. And so,
and grow much differently than the others.
And then once again, September, we're planting wheat in our perennial food plots. So we've got clover plots. We're going to drill in some wheat or cereal rye. We're just drilling in some sort of grass that's an annual to try and not annual rye grass either into our clover plots to try to take up some of that nitrogen that the clover have fixated through the growing season. Lastly, for September, prescribe fire to promote forbs and slow the spread of woody stems. So
I think that this is a really missed window for a lot of guys.
Oh, for sure. Hunting season's already here, so we just kind of hang it on the rack of being a land manager.
This,
now I'm a hunter.
This is super important. A lot of times people do face a lot of woody encroachment. We think woody encroachment is really good in the right areas, but in some portions, depending on your goals and objectives and the rest of the property, you might have too many. And as these stems are starting to slow down on nutrient uptake and starting to store things in the root system, if you come in with a prescribed fire and cut off that transport, basically the xylem and the phloem moving those nutrients to be able to store things throughout the winter in the root system, you've effectively terminated that tree or really slowed down its regeneration and set back that woody sapling. Very, very, and you could do it a lot because September in our area can certainly be dry and hot still.
Most of the time
all of the species are from a vegetation standpoint, herbaceous. They're pretty much dried out. They're pretty much done. They've hit their window in late September. So you can rock some fires during this window. It's
next
very
up,
effective.
October, planting trees and shrubs. So this kind of depends on if your trees are dormant and you're going to purchase trees that are already dormant. It's best to be planting your trees when they're dormant. So if that is October, October's a great month for that. For some people, it may be November if you're down south. But planting trees and shrubs. So maybe you're planting some covey headquarters. You are planting some shrubs for screens.
Screening cover, for sure.
You're planting some shrubs for just improved bedding and open landscapes, or you're planting some fruit or nut-bearing trees around your food plots. It's a great time to do it. Another great time to spray non-native cool-season grasses like tall fescue, smooth brome, any of your cool-season turf grasses. And this only October is the month if you already have had a couple of hard frosts or the first hard frost. So if you haven't had that frost yet, you need to wait for it to occur. For us this year, we could have been spraying out turf grasses October 14th because we had our first hard frost October 13th.
And here's one quick thing with that. A lot of times those fields, let's say it's just abandoned pastures that has a lot of cool season in it, but it probably also had some goldenrod, other blackberry in it. That stuff is still likely going to be standing. And if you're trying to apply herbicide while it's still standing, you're going to get probably very patchy results. So it may be best to wait till spring to spray it, once you maybe have a chance to brush hog it or run prescribed fire through the dead thatch, and allow that goldenrod and blackberry to be laid down, and then you get a more direct application of herbicide. Kind of depends on the field, but if you're trying to go out there and you've got a lot of tall vegetation still and you're spraying through it, trying to get to the ground, you might have some poor results. So consider that as well.
Or it could be running a bush hog high let's say you killed a buck early September 15th or October 1st, run a bush hog high to knock that stuff down. Give it a little bit of growing period to where it can grow back through that thatch and then hit it with some herbicide.
Yeah, we don't want to remove what little bit of cover there is. So changing that window.
The next thing for October is plant cereal rye in areas of weak germination to try to provide more forage and cover the soil. So a lot of times, let's just say you have a big patch of crabgrass, and because of its allelopathic tendencies, you drilled in fall food plots, and you sprayed right before that, you have weak spots in your food plot. Well, this is a great way to wear cereal rye, which can tolerate a little bit cooler weather. You can go ahead and broadcast cereal rye even in crop fields. So that's another thing you can do in early October or mid-October if you're down south. Next up, November, great month to be spraying bush honeysuckle before it loses leaves. Being a non-native, it's easy to see it during this time of the year. During November, once a lot of your native species have lost their leaves and you see these bright green bushes everywhere, well, that's probably bush honeysuckle. It's got red berries all over it. Spray the heck out of it.
How many hunting shows in the last 5 years have you started seeing those rut hunts, and it's just like, oh my gosh, all that
they're understories bush honeysuckle.
100% bush honeysuckle. It's like, y'all need to get in there. Y'all need to get in and work.
Another great month to plant trees and shrubs, as long as your native trees have gone dormant.
Yep.
Another thing, depending on where you're at, it's a great month to spray non-native cool season grasses in old fields and field edges. How many times do you see an old field or the edge of a food plot or edge of a crop field, and it's like 20 yards or it's 10 yards, and it's just choked out with cool season turf grass?
And it's like, well, those whole areas are pointless. It could be capturing a ton of sunlight and being so beneficial. When you add up 20 yards around an acre food plot or an acre opening, that's a lot of surface area right there.
Spray those. Turn two nozzles off and one nozzle on and spray it.
Yep.
Of course, November, you can start, as long as you've gone dormant, TSI and can start back up, or edge feathering can start back up. So November is a great month, even though a lot of us are hunting. If you tag out early, you can still do a lot of things to improve your farm.
Mm-hmm.
December, finally, the last month, we have spray non-native cool season grasses in old fields and field edges after frost. You still need to be in your temperature needs to be warm enough in the 50s, 60s that day, to where you can actually get some photosynthesizing going on, and it's actually going to take that herbicide in. But also, you want to make sure it's still green and not so. That's going to December. It could be really beneficial, or it could be one where you have to wait till March.
Yeah, just watch your forecast for sure.
Then TSI once again picks back up, edge feathering again, dormant season disking is a new one that you could add to it. Talked about it earlier in the spring, but
now we're December back in that window.
Is a great time to be doing dormant season disking. It's also a great time to be planting native grasses and forbs.
There is a very, very encompassing list of just activity after activity.
I need to cover something for the last 4 months that I didn't cut east.
I think they already know. But those are the high the high points throughout a year. Yes, every property is going to have different things to be able to hit and cover and do and address. But I would say 80% of the properties, if you guys followed this breakdown from month to month to month and just did that work, devote a Saturday each month to it, you can make such a big impact, that's going to yield results. It's not going to waste your time. This is where you're going to be the most effective. So just get out there and do it. Hopefully you share this with someone who may be struggling, maybe new to land management, just needs that additional information, that edge, and this will be beneficial for them.
Yep. It's definitely something that hopefully will help them prioritize and have management with meaning, to where we know what we're doing, we know how we're getting, we know the direction we're headed, and there's light at the end of the tunnel. Sometimes it can be very overwhelming to think, oh my gosh, I'm never going to get this woodlot to where I want it to, or need it to be. But if you know, we mentioned several months you can be TSI-ing. Let's just say for this month, I'm going to take this 10 acres and I'm going to try to knock that out. As long as you get the skill down and you're using a good sharp chainsaw and your buddy's running herbicide behind you, you could just girdle a whole lot of trees.
A ton.
And in no time be knocking stuff out.
Yep.
Now, girdling and spraying is not our ideal scenario. We would probably do more of like a bullseye effect, to where the interior would be girdle and spray, and then on the exterior we may just cut and fell.
Yep. That's for prescribed fire reasons. And yes. Having dead snags.
Dead snags on a fire unit is like,
You know, cancer. One thing we didn't really mention, and it honestly is one of those things that is kind of up to, let's say, the contractor himself, but it's logging operations. Logging operations honestly falls kind of whenever, wherever, weather dependent. It's probably best when the crew is either local or has the time to get there. But if we had to pick a time where we're like, okay, I'd like a lot of the logging to go on during this window, do you have a specific time frame when you're like, that's the window that I'd like to see it?
Unfortunately, in my experience with logging, it would be like the quickest you can get here.
Yeah,
whenever I would like him to avoid the wet season. So yes. It could be the dry season of summer or the cold season of winter.
Yep.
But in the winter, you flirt with getting really cold and a lot of parts break.
I'd like to see that roll in the last part of May, work hard throughout the summer, and get out of there.
Yeah.
But that's not always the case. We've had logging operations going on during the middle of hunting. I think your brother and I, hunted a stand and could hear the log, like chainsaw, just on the other side of the ridge. It's like, well, whatever.
Yeah.
Cuddy links are showing there's deer here, so I ain't worried about it. But we're just talking preferences.
Yeah.
But regardless, if you guys like this podcast, share it with someone. We cover all these techniques and specifics within these techniques in other podcasts. So go back and
search
them.
And more videos coming to explain the technique and see how to edge feather, create bedding thickets.
Spray cool season grasses.
How to hinge cut, how not to hinge cut.
Yeah.
How to plant Miscanthus gigantus.
Wow.
Don't plant Miscanthus gigantus.
Yeah. That'll be a short video.
Yeah, bag going to the trash can.
Yeah.
And so, I please subscribe to our channel on YouTube, Land and Legacy. Like us on Facebook and Instagram. And, you know, guys, just once again, enjoy 2020. And
this is your game plan.
This
Go
is,
execute.
Yeah.
Share the evidence and the all the proof of your work with us. We love
getting
that feedback.
Send us some before and after shots. And, you know, if you send us one and we like it, we may send you a hat.
And post and share with everybody on social media as well.
So, anyway, guys, appreciate you coming back once again, and Happy New Year.
We'll see you next week.